What do you get when three comic and entertainment enthusiasts join together to discuss the topics that interest us all? Something that is truly larger than life. What's on the page?
On the screen.
And on our minds. Is front and center here on Larger Than Life with Dan Totora and co-hosts TJ Yeldon and Brian Yeldon.
This is Dan Tortora here from Fox Prowl Con in Batavia, New York. Larger Than Life with Dan Tortora alongside Mark Dodson, Salacious Crumb for the Star Wars fans, and also and the voice of the Gremlins.
Yum, yum.
That will haunt my dreams still to this day. Mark, first and foremost, how are you?
I'm great. Having a good time.
Now, being in this world, when did you kind of know that, I mean, there's a lot of people that do impressions and can imitate characters, but when did you know that you could create a character, so to speak?
I've never really been asked that. That's interesting. I did impressions, like you said. I did impersonations. I started creating my own characters after I did Jedi. Up until then, I just did impersonations.
Yeah.
And the first way, one of the ways that I will create something is I look at the character. So that was in my 20s. I mean, I was a kid when I started, you know. I actually did a speech. We had to do a speech in fifth grade on how to do something. And I did a speech. I said, I want to do a speech on how to do impersonations. And that was in fifth grade.
Yeah.
So when I got up and did all these in person, you know, and taught them, tried to teach people how to hear and how to do that and where it comes from.
Do you remember what impersonations you did?
Yeah, I did Bela Lugosi, but I was like 5 years old, you know, and, you know, listen to them, children of the night, what music they make. I don't think it was quite that low when in fifth grade. And I did Boris Karloff, you know. The brains of a dead man. Well, you know, that kind of, you know, all of the, and who else they did that? Say, it wasn't me. Say, it was the other guy, Edward G. Robinson. Say. And so it was the people, you know, I was born in 1960.
Yeah.
So, of course, we did impersonations of those kind of guys. I did, you dirty rat. You killed my brother, see? You know, James Cagney.
Yeah.
James Cagney, see? And then... The teacher was a Hawaiian woman, Mrs. Wong, and then the kids were able to ask things, and guess what they said? Impersonate Mrs. Wong! So I did. I don't know how good it was, but she liked it. I got an A,
yeah.
So I didn't offend her. But. So the first way I started doing what I would look at a character, and then I would see things about him, I'd say, well, that has, let's say, the ones that I just talked about, well, this is a dark character, and you know, I'll take little bits of the impersonations. You know, maybe put a little bit of Dracula in them and a little bit of Christopher Lee. I love to do, you know, the Christopher Lee type of a voice, you know. And I just kind of combine certain things about different things. And that's the big thing was when I realized they didn't want impersonations. They wanted something original. So then, you know, that was in my 20s. Was that a long enough answer? We're done. That's all the time we have.
I think we're all set. Now, so realizing that back in your 20s, when you look at all the characters that you've created from then to now, who are some of the characters that really stick out to you that maybe have become meaningful? Because it's interesting because in my entire life, from being a little kid, I always did impersonations.
Mm-hmm.
And you grow to have favorites. You grow to have the ones that you really like or people want to hear. With your creation of characters, who are the ones that stick out that you really kind of fell in love with? Because they become real to the people that impersonate
them.
Yeah,
they do. Well, because part of it, you know, what the character is a part of. Like Salacious Crumb,
mm-hmm.
being in Jabba's throne room, and the reaction that I get from fans and everything, that's one that, well, of course, sticks out to me. You know, I do the conventions and people want to meet the cackle, the guy that did the voice for Salacious Crumb, and yeah, or the Gremlins. So because of that, those, you know, obviously really stand out. And then a lot of times it's, you know, I really like, I like how at Halloween I do a lot of theme parks that at Halloween they go Halloween. Like, yeah, I do Knott's Berry Farm, the commercials and things for them, they become Knott's Berry Farm, you know, and so, yeah, and it's a very Christopher Lee type of a voice. It's not too over the top. You know, it's not some of the Halloween stuff that I hear is just like, so I'm just like, I like the, yeah, I like to, so I love doing those. Those stand out to me. You know, what's the matter? Scared or something? You know, I love doing though. I love, yeah, doing those. I love doing. I do a lot of video games. I love doing the pirates. You know, all the pirate type of voices and those types of things. And I guess I create them. You know, I might draw from, I might do a Christopher Lee type of a pirate. He would be the captain, of course. But then I might go with a Jack Sparrow type of a, you know, he'd be more like, and I don't think I deserve that. And, you know, that kind of thing. And I kind of draw from everybody. And, yeah, and they say in our business, you know, a bad impersonation is a new voice. So, you know, this is, I just did one that I love. I love doing The Wizard of Oz, Frank Morgan. I discovered I could do that many years ago for Kellogg's. They were looking for a thing, and it was a game. And I got a call, and they said, can you do Frank Morgan? And first thing I said was, who's Frank Morgan? And they said, that's the man that played The Wizard of Oz in the original Wizard of Oz. And I said, I don't know. I love him. And it was in the days of videos where you had to go rent a tape. So I said, give me a day. I'll go rent The Wizard of Oz, yeah, and watch it, and I'll work on it. The next day I called and I just said, I think I got him down. They said, let's hear it. And I said, back where I come from, there are many great men who do many good deeds. Those men are known as good deed doers. And, you know, and I said, pay no attention to the man behind the screen, you know, and all that kind of thing. And they're like, yeah, you can do him. And I said, yeah. Since that time, I've used him a lot. And I love characters where I get to use, I love that voice, you know, and I've used him many times. And I just did a character called Professor Ulip. And he's a new video game character. And he's going to be quite a big character for Awesome Knots, is the video game. What was cool about that is Professor Ulip is a little guy. He's a little professor, that little inventor that comes from, like, the Mesozoic era, is what he says. And he invents crazy things, like weird things. For some reason, I thought, and I'd never done this, I said, I want to do Frank Morgan, but since he's little and you want him to sound little, let's see what happens if you pitch Frank Morgan up just a little bit to make him sound small. Yeah. So we did, and I did a bunch of those lines, and they pitched it up, and I was like, it was a new voice that I'd never, and I really love this one. So you asked me the ones that stick out. And I actually told them, I said, I love this character so much. I want to see you guys do a lot with this character. So that's one that sticks out.
When you look back on your childhood, and like you said, in your 20s, kind of started to develop this and understand what you wanted to do. When you go before that as a kid, what type of interest did you have? What were things that kind of built you into this? Were you always impersonating, or is it something that just kind of happened over time? I mean, as a kid, what can you remember from some of those things that you maybe pulled from, or things that you enjoyed?
Yeah, as a kid, I really liked, there was a lot of things. I liked impersonators. I liked Frank Gorshin a lot. I liked Rich Little. There was a show on when I was a kid in the 60s, late 60s, early 70s, called Copycats. And it was all these great impersonators. And it was a fantastic show. And so I would watch that show, and then I would try to do the impersonation, basically impersonating the impersonators. That was something I enjoyed doing and just had fun with. I also really liked movies, and my parents were big movie fans. And in St. Louis at the Art Museum, the St. Louis Art Museum would have exposés on a certain, you know, they would take like maybe in the summer, maybe, you know, for a month, every weekend, they would show, one of them was the Chaplin series. And so I was like 10, 11, 12, and my dad took myself and my sister to see the old Charlie Chaplin, you know, City Lights and Modern Times and The Tramp. And Chaplin really, I loved Chaplin. I think that was when I really decided I wanted to someday be a director, producer. Because Chaplin made me feel every emotion that you can feel. A Chaplin film, he can make you laugh, and he can, in the very next minute, make you cry, you know? And I think feeling that, there was something in me that I wanted to be able to do that, to help people to feel things that they should feel. Feel their emotions. Feel, you know. So that was, it had a huge influence on me. I mean, it was huge. And, you know, but as a kid, though, I played ice hockey. I grew up in St. Louis. I was a big St. Louis Blues fan. I liked playing ice hockey in the winter and skating. And I was a pretty typical kid. But, you know, I had this love, you know, and I think a lot of it was because of my parents, you know, introduced us to all those things. I mean, there's great, you know, I ended up loving Hitchcock. I loved when they did the Hitchcock series, you know. To me, Rear Window, I love that movie. Think, you know, and that makes you feel, you know, the suspense and all that. And so I don't know, I love to share that. I think that's why I like to be a part of that, you know.
When you look at a character like Salacious Crumb, seeing that Star Wars is back now, it's front and center. For a while, there was the notion, I mean, there was 4, 5, and 6, a big break, 1, 2, and 3. George Lucas says, I'm done. And all of a sudden, Disney inks that deal with Lucasfilm, and here comes Episode 7. Mm-hmm. Has it, not that they needed to be reinvigorated, but has there been an uptick in people wanting to hear Salacious Crumb more or come out to things more, knowing that Star Wars is alive again? Not that it ever dies, but it's had a new breath of life, so to speak.
Yeah, there's definitely been a big uptick. I mean, it's on everybody's mind now, you know, so it makes people, with the new one coming, people are remembering back when they first saw Star Wars or Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, the originals. And because knowing that this now follows that, you know, and that the original cast is back. So it's had, there's been a big new resurgence, you know, of all this. And obviously, I mean, you see it, it's on everybody's mind.
Yeah.
Even if you don't want it to be on your mind, sorry, I don't care where you go. I just came through the airports, and even in the airport and all the little shops, there's Star Wars things.
All over Target.
It's everywhere.
It's
everywhere. So, yeah, so I'm back in people's minds, you know, for right now. And it feels good. I like it. I've had some really cool things happen this year because of Disney and because of this new movie where I can't really say much, but I can just say that my life, my childhood came full circle at Disney. I was invited to Disney for D23, and George Lucas was made a Disney legend. And we didn't talk about it, but the first time I really thought I might want to do voices was in the Haunted Mansion in 1970 at the age of 10.
I was going to say, one of your voices sounded like one of those characters.
Paul Frees.
Yeah.
Yes. The ghost host.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, yes.
It's like the ghost, because it sounds like, I mean, it's a scary voice, but it's almost scary grandfather, where it's still kind of welcoming. You don't want to believe it's bad. That's kind of what
that's a great way to describe that voice, and that is exactly, that's how I like to play those characters. I don't like to think that any of them are, you know, I don't think I'm mischievous. My characters are mischievous. We're just trying to have a good time. People, we're misunderstood.
I think it's fair to say the gremlins are a little bit mischievous.
We're a little mischievous. And you know, if you just hang out in the bar with us and buy us a beer, we'd probably have a good time. But people get scared of us, so then we get backed into a corner and have to fight. That's kind of how I look at it. But So my life came up because I was in. So at the age of 10, I thought I might want to do voices like Paul Frees, and I became a big Paul Frees fan. He is my favorite voiceover person in history. Is Paul Frees all the stuff? He's Professor Ludwig von Drake. He passed away, but he was Professor Ludwig von Drake for Disney. He's in the Haunted Mansion. He's so many of the voices at Disneyland. He's Boris Badenoff. But here's a range for you. He was also the original Pillsbury Doughboy. So from that to the...
New from Pillsbury.
So, you know, I worked on trying to impersonate Paul Frees.
Yeah.
So my life came full circle when I was invited to... Because Disney had bought Star Wars, and I get this invitation to go to D23, to go be a guest at Disneyland, and to sign autographs. And I had the vice president of Disney come up and want Salacious Crumb's autograph for his office at Disney.
Yeah.
And I was overwhelmed for 3 days nonstop. I'm like, my life just came full circle. My childhood to now just came full circle. Here I went from a kid 10 years old thinking I'd love to do Disney stuff, and now I'm at Disney because of this. And then my career life has come full circle, and I can't say too much about it, but the first thing I ever did was Star Wars. And that's all I can say.
Well, there's a hope that maybe there's a second coming of that. But we can't talk about it. We can just hope.
A new hope.
Okay.
Sorry.
Fair enough. What, speaking of gigs, what was the first gig that you got? What was the first opportunity, paid opportunity, that someone said, we want you to do this voice?
Salacious Crumb.
That was the first ever?
That was it.
So we are talking a true full circle.
True full circle, yeah.
Larger Than Life Toys and Comics is a 6,000 square foot haven of comics and collectibles located inside the Great Northern Mall in Clay, New York. They offer new as well as vintage comics, collectibles, video games, and more. Larger Than Life Toys and Comics will also buy from you. So bring in your used or vintage comics and toys today to their store inside the Great Northern Mall in Clay, New York. Call 315-622-1891 to learn more about their trade-in policy, store credit, and even layaway. That's 315-622-1891. And make sure to like their Facebook page, Larger Than Life Comics, for constant updates, store hours, and more.
And when you look back on Salacious Crumb, in the moment of being in a studio and doing the character, did you ever think that you would be sitting next to a Salacious Crumb today, that so many people would want to hear Salacious Crumb? Did you ever think that when you were in the studio?
Never. Never. I never would have thought. No. You're in the moment, you know, and you're trying to make a living, you're trying to eat and pay your bills, and you're focused on that, and then you're working, and then you do think, hey, I think this, you know, we're all saying, hey, this is probably going to be the big movie of the summer. None of us say, yeah, and you know, 30 years from now, they're still going to want to talk to us. Yeah. Well, nobody thinks that.
Yeah.
You know, you're just hoping that this will be the big one of the summer. And then it is, and you're excited, and then you're always moving on. You know, you have to keep working, and then you're always on to the next project, on to the next thing. So, Lord, no, I would have never thought that you would want to sit here and talk to me about that, but I'm really glad you do. It's humbling. It's very gratifying.
Yeah.
It's very gratifying to be a part of a character that so many people love and remember, and that's part of pop culture, you know, that you, most people, they may not know his name, but you can say, you know that little guy with Jabba the Hutt that cackled? Oh, yeah, everybody. So it's, I'm blessed. It's, a lot of people went into that, you know, that making that of great. I mean, hundreds. And I got to say, Tony McVeigh sculpted Salacious Crumb. Chris Wayless made Salacious with Tony. Tim Rose was the puppeteer. I did the cackle. Ben Burt was the sound man that took my voice and found something that he thought worked.
Yeah.
And made it sound even better than I did. You know, I mean, he enhanced it to a degree. And so a lot of people went into that little guy and deserve all the credit. You know, they all deserve.
So we look back on your history and your first paid gig. was a Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
How did they get in touch with you? How did they know about what you do?
I wanted, as I mentioned, I wanted to work in the film business and wanted to direct and produce. I went to Los Angeles in 78, right out of high school, 1978. I ended up with Lucasfilm in 1980. They didn't have any work other than they were building Skywalker Ranch. And I met somebody that was like, well, why don't you move up to Marin and work on the ranch? And then when something opens up in production, they could bring you over to production. Yeah. But right now, all they need. So I agreed to. And while I was doing that, as I had worked as a laborer to build the sound studio that I ended up first recording in. And then I was moved out to Skywalker. That was in the Kerner Company in San Rafael. Then I was moved out to Skywalker Ranch and made an apprentice carpenter. And shortly after that happened, I had let it be known that I did voices. And if anybody, Ben Burt actually invited me to come over and try out. So I was working, waiting for something to open up in production.
Yeah.
And he said, come on over and try out. I've got some creatures that I need voices for so you can come up with. And then Gremlin, the guys that made Salacious, went shortly thereafter with Spielberg to make the Gremlins.
Yeah.
And they said, and they look a lot alike. And they said, Steven Spielberg actually told them, I think the Gremlins should have that kind of voice that your little guy with Jabba had, because they looked a lot alike. Can you get a hold of them? And they knew how to get a hold of me. And next thing I know, I'm working on Gremlins, you know, and then I had an agent, and then, and it just rolled from there, you know, and I did a demo, and sent it out, and started auditioning, and actually getting jobs. I mean, I was shocked. I was like, well, I'll try it, and then I would get it.
Yeah.
You know, so, I guess that's the way, and I love it. I mean, I really thought I would be the director, producer, you know. But this has been so fulfilling that there's not even a part of me anymore that says I would like to. I get to do my own thing. I get to play around with great directors. I've gotten to work with Joe Dante and him tell me what he wants, and then me say, how about this? And kind of the back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, that's the fun part of filmmaking is that back and forth, the actual doing it, you know. So, yeah, but that's how it started. Pretty crazy, huh?
Yeah.
Really crazy.
George Lucas to Steven Spielberg, I think.
Like a
I think there's like, you could cut it like a knife, the envy of listeners to the show for you to bounce from one to the other.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Probably.
Did you ever have a starstruck moment, a moment of stepping back and saying, here's George Lucas, and, oh, George Lucas, I did this for him, and Steven Spielberg heard it, so now I'm going over to work with Steven Spielberg and Dante, as you talked about. Did you ever have a moment where you had to kind of step out of your own body?
No. For some reason, it's almost like I was supposed to be there. I never felt that. I always felt like we're working. Like, we're working men.
Yeah.
Like anybody, you know, you go to work with your people that you work with, and yeah. I'll tell you a starstruck moment. I've only had one. Maybe Willie Nelson a little bit. I love Willie.
I was going to say you sitting on the couch with me that I starstruck you somehow. I don't know. I was going to take credit.
You what?
That I starstruck you.
You do.
I do?
You
okay,
do.
All right.
You do. You do. Yeah, okay, I'll admit it. But real quick, I was working for Dick Clark, and I was a DJ while I was doing voiceovers in Los Angeles.
Just keep name dropping because you're going higher and higher up my list right now. So keep name dropping.
That was a wonderful job
your
too.
Your history is, I mean, I respected you first and foremost for you by yourself, but the more people that are in your 0 degrees of separation is amazing.
Well, I've been really, yeah, when I'm in the middle of doing the sound on Gremlins 2, and all of a sudden my favorite, one of my all-time favorites, you know, it shows up, and I'm like, you know, it happened twice on Gremlins, but on Gremlins 2, when I saw Christopher Lee And I said, holy crap. And Joe Dante's like, what? And I said, that's Christopher Lee. He's like, yeah? And I said, I'm in a movie with Christopher Lee. Oh, my God. You know, because I grew up on Christopher Lee.
Yeah.
You know that. And then the first time on Gremlins 1, when we were doing the movie theater scene, and same thing happened where the Seven Dwarfs came on screen. And I went, what? I'm in a movie with the Seven Dwarfs. This is incredible. And Joe, I remember Joe saying, not only that, but you're going to sing Hi-Ho with the Seven Dwarfs. And I was like, what? Yeah, and then, of course, we did the Hi-Ho, you know, where we all sing with the Seven Dwarfs, you know. Those are amazing things to me. Kind of, I guess, starts with the Starstruck thing. Working for Dick Clark, I was a DJ. And out of L.A., it was a national thing. We were on several, couple hundred stations. There was several formats. There was Music of Your Life format. Now, you need to know that my favorite, all-time favorite movie is Mary Poppins.
Okay.
I love Mary Poppins because it makes me laugh. And at the end, I cry every damn time to this day. Good tears of joy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's my favorite movie. It is my favorite movie.
Nothing was done like that in its time.
No.
And there's really nothing that's ever been the same.
Right. So Starstruck. So I'm working Music of Your Life. So they would play show tunes and things on music. It was another format.
Yeah.
Come out of my studio. No, and they would have artists come in and interview artists on Music of Your Life. I come out. Nobody told me that this person was going to be there. I come out and I go in to get coffee, and I come around and you're in a hurry because you're on the air, so you run out during music's playing. I run out, get my coffee. I come running around the corner, and I almost run into and pour my coffee on Julie Andrews. She is there to be interviewed. And I did not, and here's what I did.
You just made my wife's life right now. She's
waiting to see
you. She hasn't said a word as we're recording, and she's like, oh, my God.
Julie Andrews.
Yes, Julie Andrews. So I come around the corner, and I literally, like, put on the brakes real quick and back up, and I'm, like, a foot away from Julie Andrews, like, looking face to face. And I looked at her, and I went, Mary Poppins, just like that. And
how old were you?
I would have been about 30 years old. I became this little kid.
Yeah.
And Mary Poppins, and she looks at me and she says, well, yes, I suppose.
Oh my.
Just like Mary Poppins would say. And I went, I love you. And she says, why, thank you. And I said, have a nice day. And I ran back. I like ran into the studio and I was shaking. I almost fainted. I mean, for real, I almost fainted. And then it got around, right? So the next thing, this other DJ comes in. He walks in, he looks at me, he goes, Mary Poppins? Really? And I said, yeah, I almost fainted, man. I love Mary Poppins. I was just like, this is just.
Yeah.
And he's like, I can't, you, that, I said, that's my favorite movie. And, you know, people knew what I, movies, the things that I'd done. And he's like, that's your favorite movie, really? And I said, yeah, it really is. Yeah. So I was starstruck. I was totally starstruck. And it was great. It was great. I'll never forget that. I didn't talk to her again after. I mean, it's not like I had a chance to go back and say, you know, wow, you blew me. I think she knew she blew me away. I'm sure she was like, that guy really likes Mary Poppins.
You know? Yeah.
No. I just love the. I love you.
I love you.
Why, thank you. Because you could see her just turning her head and going, oh, aren't you such a dear?
Like, yeah, exactly. Good. Yeah. I love you. So, yeah, that's my starstruck. That's the only time. Really. Like I say, Willie Nelson was a little. I also hosted a country radio program for 15 years, and I would interview country artists.
Yeah.
And Willie's my favorite. And I interviewed everybody from. You know, Alan Jackson, Waylon Jennings, to Waylon, to Shania Twain, to, you know, all hundreds of country artists. Willie was always my favorite, and I really prepared for it, and it was the first time that I got on his bus with him, of course, and set it up, and we're doing the interview, and I was just so stupid. I was just so nothing came out right, you know, because there was so much I wanted to say that it like log jammed in my head.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. So I think I was a little bit struck by Willie. I love Willie. I love his lyrics. He's the Shakespeare of country music, and I didn't make that up. That's something that's been around a long time. But yeah, I love Willie's lyrics. So.
I wish this couch was a DeLorean, and that Doc Brown could take me back to these moments that you have.
Great.
Because I mean, you have lived a life. You have made characters come alive, and in the process, you have achieved what little kids care about now as adults. Appreciate your voices. You as a kid got to meet the people that you appreciated. Mm-hmm. So you're giving to the community, and the world is giving back to you, so to speak.
It really is.
And I believe in a higher power. I know some people do, some people don't, but
I do. I
truly believe that God does not make any mistakes, and if you put good in, he will throw it back at you so good that you almost faint.
Yeah, I think that's very well put. I think that, yes, I do believe in the force. And I like to call it the Great Spirit, the Force, God. I don't think the name matters.
Yeah.
You know, I believe in a loving, nurturing, forgiving spirit that breathes the life into us when we come into this world. And I totally believe in that. And I do believe that you get back what you put out there, you know. So maybe I've done something right along the way, because I've had some real blessings. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
So for Mark Dodson, that I feel, while there are no coincidences, we just admitted there are no mistakes, and I can honestly say that the feeling in my heart right now is a very unique one to be sitting here, and I hope to God that I get many more opportunities to talk with you, because it has been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking with you. It really has. I hope we can do this again. We will.